Alaska, like many other states, has seen an increase in incarceration increase in the last decade that is financially unsustainable. The expense beyond the dollars that it takes to house prisoners can cause a heavy emotional toll that reaches deep into families and communities and perpetrates impacts that can last for generations. How do we change the direction of those heading down a bad path? We're talking about justice reform today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about justice reform today. The United States locks up more people than any other country. There are more than 1.5 million people in prison. The nation has been aggressively cracking down on crime for decades. And more than 20 years ago, a new Get Tough on Crime bill called the Violent Crime Control Act was made law. The idea was to clean up the streets and improve public safety, but the result has been overflowing prisons and high rates of recidivism. Here to discuss the growing expense of incarceration and the need for reform, our Senator John Coghill. He is joining us from the studios of KUAC in Fairbanks. Senator Coghill is the Senate Majority Leader and is the sponsor of Senate Bill 91, an omnibus criminal justice reform package. Good morning, Senator Coghill.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. Also in the studio with me here in Anchorage is Jeff Jesse. Jeff is the CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The trust has, among other programs, a focus on disability justice. We'll learn more about that. And good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. And on the phone from normally Washington, D.C., but today Mississippi, is Zoe Towns. Zoe is the state director for Pew Charitable Trust, the organization that is working pro bono with Alaska to help guide the prison reform initiative. Hi, Zoe.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for being on. Senator Coghill, let's start with the current situation with Alaska's prison system. The state spends more than $51,000 per prisoner per year, and the projections are we're going to need another prison if incarceration rates continue as they are. Beyond the impacts of a growing population, what else is contributing to the rapid growth in locking people up here in Alaska?
Good morning. Well, there are several things, and we've tried to focus on many of them, but just to back up a little bit, one of the things that we did in the legislature a couple of years ago is we put together a commission that was going to study some of those very issues and come back with recommendations. And the reason you have Zoe on the phone with us is because they helped us with some technical issues that helped us dive deep into the numbers. And so they will come up with probably some recommendations that maybe some surprising numbers to us. So the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission is developing those right now. But what we do know is last year we paid $327 million in our corrections system last year. The population has grown about 27% in the last decade. We just can't sustain that kind of a growth. So we have to look at why that's happening. We do know that prison length is a big issue. Sometimes it's pretrial issues, which I think we'll probably talk about some in depth. But the cost is going up as well. I mean, we just built a brand new prison for quite a bit of money, and we can't afford to do another one. The last one was about, I think, $275 million. The next one to be projected to be closer to $400 million. So it cost about $142 a day just to keep a prisoner, and they keep coming back. So the question is there something we can do to help them not come back, because about 95% of the people that are in jail will be back out on the streets, and about 67% are recidivating. It's just not going to work that way for society, I think. And so we have to find some solutions.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about justice reform and trying to find ways of slowing the growth rate of those who are incarcerated and those who are recidivizing, people who go back into prison after getting released. The number, if you'd like to join our conversation statewide, is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In the Anchorage area, you can reach us at 550-8422, 550-8422, or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. I had a couple of calls yesterday, people interested in the topic and some groups that they're working with. We'll probably hear from them. Senator Coghill, you mentioned the pretrial incarceration rates. Those numbers, the detainee numbers in pretrial, have nearly doubled in the last decade. Why is there such growth in pretrial detention?
Well, I'm hoping we find out some better detail along the way, but we do know that looks like most of it is length of stay. So as we work through why some of it is the length of stay, some of it is geography. That's probably fair. Some of it is awaiting trial. They may appeal or wait for discovery, some of those things. But it's just a fact that we're holding them for longer periods of time. So that is a big issue. There's also a population management problem when you have a pretrial facility. You can have people with longer-term jail sentences staying in a jail who you may have to move for pretrial people. And it complicates both the trial date setting and the population generally. So there's many issues when you have people in jail for longer periods of time. Probably a lot of it is they can't afford the bail. I'd say that's probably emerging as one of the major issues.
Thank you for that, Senator Coghill. We're talking about justice reform today and trying to slow the growth rate of incarceration. Zoe Towns is with us. Zoe is with the Pew Charitable Trust. Zoe, why did Pew decide to work with Alaska? You've been partnered with the state since May. What have you found in that time?
Sure. Well, thank you. First of all, I'll just say that there's really two trends that we found at Pew and across the nation and in states across the nation. The first is a long-term trend. It's about a 40-year trend of uninterrupted incarceration growth. So across the country, states have experienced this uptick, this really skyrocketing increase in the number of people that states are sending behind either jails or prisons. Also, we've seen an enormous increase in the amount of money state taxpayers are spending to incarcerate these offenders. So that's one trend that I think is important and that helps put Alaska in some context. The other trend is a much more recent one. Over the course of the last 10 years or so, a pretty broad array of states have sort of put the brakes on prison building and prison population growth and undergone a process much like the one that Alaska is engaged in right now, that is about looking at the drivers of their correction system, looking at who's coming in the front door, how long are they staying, what is it costing, what's working well that could be scaled up, and what's not working well that really needs to be curbed or eliminated in terms of policies and practices and statutes and programs. And that new trend of really looking at the data and looking at the research and sort of investigating what works and what doesn't in terms of reducing recidivism, that new trend has meant that many states, the majority of states, are actually beginning to experience a new trend, which is one of decreased, either plateauing or decreasing incarceration rates in prison populations. And what we've seen is those states bring their populations down while also bringing crime down. And so I think it's state stories like that and the sort of new national story around what's possible that helped bring many Alaska leaders to the table. And as you noted, in May of this year, we received a formal invitation from the leaders in all three branches, from the judiciary, from the legislature, and from the governor's office, asking for our assistance in engaging in a data-driven process to look at how Alaska could sort of learn lessons from the research and from other states about what they could do differently to begin to bend the curve on their incarceration rate.
Give us just an overview, Zoe, of Pew's mission with prison reform.
Sure. So, you know, as a larger institution, we're interested in helping states and federal policymakers advance fiscally sound and data-driven policies across really a broad variety of policy areas. Specifically, the Public Safety Performance Project that's currently working with Pew is interested in helping states advance fiscally sound, data-driven sentencing and corrections policies. And so the fact is that when we went down this prison building path 30 or 40 years ago, we actually didn't know a whole lot about what works to stop criminal behavior and what works to stop reoffending. In the intervening decades, there's been a tremendous amount of research with economists and criminologists, academics of all sorts and practitioners of all sorts to look at what works best to begin to bring those recidivism rates down in terms of treatment, in terms of behavioral therapies, all kinds of approaches that are much more cost-effective. Our work is really in kind of connecting the dots between what states are doing and using the data to look at what states are doing and then to look at the research and look at kind of what's possible and how can we connect these policymakers with the research that would help them guide policymaking to make some new decisions.
I want to get you here in the conversation in just a moment, Jeff. I don't want you to feel left out here. But before we bring in the perspective of Jeff Jesse and the Mental Health Trust Authority, Zoe, Texas was one of the first states that you worked with about 10 years ago. A decade out, what does their prison system look like today? Have they managed to control growth, and how are you measuring success there?
Sure. So the Texas story is interesting, and I think one that's particularly helpful since we've had some time to look at what's happened. Texas in 2006 and 2007 had been experiencing, like many states across the nation, had been experiencing uninterrupted growth in their prison population. They were large. They were growing. They were due to grow by about 17,000 additional beds over the course of the coming decade. Now, that's a big number because Texas is a very big state, but it was nonetheless a huge price tag coming due. And policymakers really, whereas they had been just sort of writing these checks every year to accommodate this growth, they kind of paused and thought, hold on a second, are we ready to write this one, or should we maybe check and see if there's something else that we could do? Ultimately, that group of bipartisan policymakers came up with a proposal to both do some policy reforms and then also make a pretty unprecedented investment into mental health programs and drug treatment programs, alternatives that judges and parole board could use to sanction offenders and to hold offenders accountable that didn't necessarily mean long prison terms. And what we've seen now in the intervening years is that Texas's prison population actually stopped growing and began to decline. The state's closed, I think it's the latest count is 3 prisons, though it could have gone up since then. So instead of building prisons, they were able to actually bring some offline. And they have the real amazing thing is that they've experienced alongside that that decrease in the prison population, a decrease in their crime rates. And so they've got crime rates that are as low as they were in 1963 now, sort of bringing those down alongside with the decrease in the prison population. So it's a story that I think has brought a lot of other states to the table. If tough on crime, Texas can head in a different direction. I think a lot of other states have thought it's possible for them too.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and I'm Lori Townsend. Today we're talking about justice reform. My guests are Senator John Coghill, who is joining us from the studios in KUAC in Fairbanks. Jeff Jesse is in the studio with me here today in Anchorage. He is the CEO of the Mental Health Trust Authority. And Zoe Towns is the state director for Pew Charitable Trust. She's joining us by phone from Mississippi. Jeff, Jesse, you are at the helm of the Mental Health Trust Authority. Describe the role of the trust in this effort.
Well, we're primarily a funder and an advocate for improving public policy. We are a state corporation that acts like a private foundation. We grant about $20 million a year to try to improve the state's mental health service, broadly defined. It includes not just people with mental illness, but people with substance abuse disorders, folks with Alzheimer's disease related dementia, developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injury. And our role here is to take some responsibility for not only the problem, but the solutions. 60% of the inmates in the Department of Corrections are trust beneficiaries. They not only tend to serve longer sentences, but they recidivate at a higher rate. So we're very excited about working with both Senator Coghill and the Pew Charitable Trust Program, because we are also a data-driven organization that's looking to turn the curve on these problems.
What is disability justice?
Well, it's a focus area of the trust. What the trustees decided several years ago is that rather than just shotgunning our funding to projects across the state, we would try to focus on some specific areas. For example, for a number of years, it was Bring the Kids Home, where we helped the state reduce the number of kids out of state from over 430 down to under 100 today. Now we've moved on into some other areas, and one of them for a number of years now has been disability justice, trying to really address these justice issues our beneficiaries are engaged in and help them become more productive, integrated citizens.
Mm-hmm. You can join our conversation today on justice reform at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 statewide. In the Anchorage area, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to go to the phones for a moment now and talk to either, is it Stefan in Palmer?
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Townsend.
This good morning.
This is Stefan in Palmer, yes. I am very concerned about my son's behavior and potential for ending up in the correction system. I've been working with my son for quite a while, and have come upon a program by Dr. Ross Green. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's Collaborative and Proactive Solutions. What it does is it teaches a kids that have lagging skills and works with them with their unmet expectations. I would encourage, it's a proactive partnering solution with the kid, either already in the correctional system or at home or in the schools. My son is in the behavioral school in Wasilla. We've seen a great success. Dr. Ross Green, as G-R-E-E-N-E, is coming to Alaska to speak to with Breida Bishop's group for the Department of Health and Human Services on December the 9th. They've instituted his program, Collaborative Problem Proactive Solutions, in the state of Maine and other states, where they've seen a great drop in the recidivism rate. They're catching the kids in school. They're catching them as they go into the system, and it's working. Once again, it's a program to teach the kids, work with the kids,
right,
that don't have the skills. And
well, thank you for bringing that up, and good luck with working with your son. I want to give Jeff Jesse an opportunity to weigh in here, because I think he's familiar with this approach and this program. Jeff?
Well, that's a great example of what Zoe was saying, is that we know there are evidence-based practices out there that get good results. And in fact, the trust is funding Dr. Green's visit to Alaska in an attempt to try to get more of these programs known in the community, and demonstrate that they can be effective at working with folks. So I'm very pleased that he's coming up. And this is just one of those strategies that we'll be looking to assist the state in sorting through and finding the ones that are going to be most cost effective and get better results for our people.
Mm-hmm. Senator Coghill, you wrote that our prisons are over capacity. Does this mean that every bed is full? And if that's the case, what's happening with the overflow? Are we again sending prisoners outside?
We are not at this point, I think, except for under some unusual circumstances. What we do now is we try to do as much electronic monitoring as possible. And a lot of what we've discussed is, firstly, the evidence-based practices, as Zoe and Jeff Jesse have said. The other thing is, what are some of the practices that are working that you can hold people accountable, but still give them the opportunity to change their behavior? And the Department of Corrections has already started on some of those things. And you got to remember, the population is not static. So you have people coming in and people going out all the time. So the fact that there are days when you really do have to have people staying in the gymnasium rather than have an actual cell, that may happen for a day, may happen for more than a day. To me, that's not acceptable, and we've just got to change it. I think another thing, as Jeff said, a huge population is behavioral health or some other form that really is looking for programmatic approaches rather than just sitting in a cell. And we were asking in the legislature, help us, Pew Foundation or Mental Health Foundation, help us understand what can we do with a population like that that can change their behavior, still hold them accountable, keep the public safe, because we're not interested in having a less safe public. We're more interested in making sure that if they don't return, it's because they're not doing bad things anymore, whether it's stealing property for drugs, if drug is the main problem. Can we get a program? And so if we can reduce the cost of prisons, we can reinvest that extra dollar, if you will, that we had normally planned on for a prison bed into a programmatic approach. And so that's why from the time to time you'll hear the word justice reinvestment. If we can lower the cost of the actual prison bed, then we can reinvest that into these programs, which I'm grateful for Mr. Green and the many other programs. But yes, it is true, we're bumping up the edge right now, and we know that if we keep this trajectory, we're going to have to build another prison. It should be on the drawing board right now. So we're in a little bit of a time crunch on looking for the best practices, one of the reasons we invited Pew Foundation up here. And it's a bipartisan effort. I can tell you, Senator Ellis and I, Senator French when he was in there, Senator oh man, his name just went out of my head, from Eagle River. We worked on it to get the commission going, and this is step two of probably a multi-year step. But we can't afford to have these prisons as full as they are, but we can't afford to have the public feel unsafe either.
Let's return to the phones. We've got some callers that want to help add to the discussion, and Guy is on the phone from Valdez. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, these people, when they come out, a lot of them do, like you've been saying, have mental problems. And I don't think you guys are willing to give these guys the real attention that they're going to need when they get out. There's no real support systems for them. Most of the time, their families don't want anything to do with them once they've gotten into all of this trouble. And then they get out, and there's nobody really, you know, in their corner, you know, making sure that they're, you know, they need mentors, they need jobs, they need a place to live. And you guys, when they get out, the reason the recidivism rate is so high is because they don't have any of that support system. And they need counseling. They need they have drug and drinking problems, and there's nobody there for them. And what we need to do is to have more mentors. And maybe you need to go to these guys that have gotten out of prison and that have gotten their lives back together. Maybe they can be mentors for these guys because they can relate more than you or any of your panel can relate to these people. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're making an excellent point, Guy, and that brings up something that I wanted to move to next. So thank you for that segue. Autism, fetal alcohol, spectrum disorder, these things can be very pronounced or they can be very subtle. More than 120 kids born each year in Alaska have FASD, the highest per capita rate in the country. Can you get an idea of how large that impact that mental health challenges contribute to people who are ending up in incarceration? And as Guy said, what can be done to make sure that people who have conditions that are through no fault of their own are going to be with them for their life? They may have poor impulse control, and it just makes it more difficult to stay on track. Jeff, this is definitely your area, and how are these things being addressed in the longer term when people are coming out to help bring down those recidivism rates within the Mental Health Trust Authority's purview?
Well, Guy is exactly right. What we know is that when folks come out of prison, to be successful, they need basically three things. They need housing. They need safe, affordable, and in many cases, sober housing. They need employment. They need a legitimate way to make a living in the community. And they need support for recovery because we know many of them are coming out with mental health and substance abuse programs. That's why the program, for example, in Anchorage that Partners for Progress runs, the Reentry Center, that's what they focus on, is how to get people housed, how to get them employment, and then how to connect with the service providers that can support them in recovery. And we have success. We can see these programs succeeding. One of the things we're doing now is funding coordinators for a number of reentry coalitions around the state where communities have recognized the need to pull together to address these concerns. And so we're helping by funding coordinators for a number of those so they can actually develop local solutions to coming up with answers to some of these problems. So we have the technology. We know what to do. It's just a matter of ramping up and getting those services in place. And we're very fortunate to have a Department of Corrections under the leadership of the current commissioner that recognizes the role of the department. Ron Taylor has been really helpful in helping to rebuild programs within the department. And that's the first step. Get them help while they're in corrections and then support them when they get out.
All right. We are talking about, I'm sorry, Senator Coghill?
If I could just jump in.
Oh, please do.
A couple of sentences. In our Department of Corrections, when people have done things that are either unsafe to themselves or to society, in the correction system, we're beginning to do a better job of assessing both their risk and the needs that they have. That's been a long time coming, and under this justice reinvestment, I see a higher priority put on that, and you'll see the legislature probably focusing on that as well. So it dovetails with what Jeff says, but it's also trying to figure out how to get the right person to the right program, which we've had a hard time doing.
All right, if you're just joining us, we're talking about justice reform and the need to bring down incarceration rates and recidivism rates. We're going to return to the phones real quickly before we take a short break. CJ is in Wasilla. Hello, CJ.
Hi. I have concerns with many things related to the justice system, in fact, including the fact that 40% of Alaska inmates currently housed are unsentenced, which means they haven't even executed their right to a fair trial yet, and yet in our paperwork, in our policy, in the way that we handle prisoners, we call them unsentenced, which means that it almost alludes to a basic assumption that they will be sentenced instead of the presumption that someone is innocent until proven guilty. I think that if you look at the numbers and if you look at the pre-conviction rate that has increased over 90% in Alaska in the last 9 years, that's pretty dramatic. When you look at the fact that the post-conviction rate has only increased a marginal amount, and a basic question that we have to ask is, why are we spending so much more money with so many more people in prison long before they ever get to trial, and how many years are they spending in prison that we're paying to house them there before they ever get a chance to a trial?
Thank you.
But I think one of...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay. One of the other things that's of critical concern to me personally is I don't know how many folks have heard about what happened at Goose Creek in the last couple of weeks, but it's the way that we treat our protective custody inmates. Inmates who request protective custody for any number of reasons, whether it's the crime that they're accused of and haven't been convicted of yet, or whether it's a crime they've been convicted of, or even, you know, informing on someone else and something that's happening in the prison, there's nothing in our DOC policy that says that we have to provide a standard of living for them that is equitable to other inmates. And what that boils down to is that inmates who are in protective custody are being put into solitary confinement situations for long periods of time, including nearly lifetime sentences, if not lifetime sentences. And Goose Creek was one of the first prisons that proved that we could create an environment for them, or a mod, that our environment, they didn't have the same extortion, they didn't have the same problems they had to deal with that you would in other general population mods. And recently, in the last couple of weeks, it was just entirely eliminated. So all of those men who were used to living relatively normally and had finally found a safe place to be housed in Alaska have just been thrown into solitary confinement and are being pressured to go back into general population where they're at risk of injury or death if they want any of those rights or those basic amenities like being allowed to have pencils and pens back in their life. So I think that there needs to be serious look at the way that protective custody inmates in Alaska are housed, especially considering that that status does not require a conviction. And personally, I think that until the committee opens up the opportunity for family and loved ones and other individuals who know these people, who are in these institutions, who see what is happening to them, to be able to raise our voices and be able to tell you what's going on in a safe manner where we're not going to get retaliated against, you're not going to be able to see the full picture just from the bureaucratic standpoint. You
All right.
need the ability to see what's going on the ground.
Thank you so much, CJ, for your comments. We want to take a look at that, and we will be discussing this and other points about justice reform as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing justice reform and the need to bring down incarceration rates and the rates of recidivism in the system. My guests are Senator John Coghill on the line from KUAC in Fairbanks. Jeff Jesse is in the studio with me here in Anchorage. He is the CEO of the Mental Health Trust Authority. And Zoe Towns is on the phone. She's with Pew Charitable Trust, and she's currently in Mississippi. We've had some good callers, and I do want to return to the phones for just a moment here and go to Roger in White Mountain. Roger, I think, wants to talk about something that is also a point I wanted us to get to, which is the overrepresentation of Alaska Native people in the incarceration system. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a short comment. 40% of the prison population in Alaska is made up of Native peoples, but only make up 15% of Alaska's total population. Rural Alaska leads the nation in social ills across the board, which tells me that it's very expensive to live here, and it's even more expensive to fix, especially with falling state revenues. In other words, rural Alaska is broken. Throwing massive monies at the problem is not a solution. We already tried that The only winners in this case are the correctional corporation. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And Senator Coghill, our the caller that we had before the we went to the break, and then Roger's comments about the high rates of the overrepresentation per capita of Alaska Native people in prison. In Alaska, also the African American population is overrepresented in Alaska. What's being done in that respect to look at what's happening to see about how to change those numbers?
All good points. I think probably for the disproportionate share, probably it comes down to the fact that alcohol and drugs are rampant within many places of Alaska. And what we've done is we have filled our jail, probably, I'd say, on the pretrial issue, the majority of them are charged with nonviolent misdemeanors. And that begins a cycle sometimes that just doesn't quit. And Jeff Jesse knows that part of that is housing, part of that is treatment. Once people get to the place where they're held accountable, then it's a matter of what's a better pathway. That's what we've been trying to figure out. And for some of the villages, drugs and alcohol have just been a serious problem. Domestic violence is a serious problem. Once, and quite often, it has to do with drugs or alcohol. So the question is, once they get held accountable, holding them in jail does not seem to be changing the pattern. Is there better ways to do it? And working with Jeff Jesse and trying to get the stats from the statistics and looking deeper into it as we can go from the Pew Foundation, I think at least on the pretrial and the probation parole outfit group, we're going to probably find solutions that say these programmatic approaches not only save us money, but they actually save lives.
The idea of strengthening community supervision, is it time, Senator, to allow tribes to handle more legal intervention, especially with youth, before they get to the point where they're heading on a path going to jail?
Yeah, that's been a journey that's been tough for the state to get into. This year, I'm going to propose codifying a working relationship with tribal courts for these diversion programs, so that you can have local justice take care of some of these problems that they know not only the people, but they know what's going on in the community. One of the other things that they can do restorative justice in a way that we have a hard time doing in other courts. Many many magistrates have been able to work, I think, up here in the interior. The Tanana chiefs have worked well with the court system here on tribal diversions. We're going to try to codify that so that these things actually can help change the way we're doing things in both in communities and in our jail system.
All right. The Criminal Justice Commission was tasked with coming up with recommendations by December. What are you hoping that will look like?
Well, we're... Yes. So we've asked for some specific things. How do we reduce the population, keep the public safe? And so we've given them some requests. Help us to look at what's driving the prison population growth, which I think we've got a glimpse of with the, say, for example, the pretrial group. What are we doing with sentence offenders that make a difference? About, I think, 90% of them are going to enter back into society after fulfilling their sentence. And many of them, rightfully so, should be sentenced accordingly. But what happens when they come out? What can we do for, say, probation, parole that's better? What can we do for housing? Or, as Jeff Jesse was saying, as soon as they get out of jail, instead of just getting their last possessions that they had when they came in and a kick out the door, what can we do to prepare them for the society in which they're going to go to, both with housing and work? And we have found from the Justice Commission that we have huge barriers even to employment because of the way people have been charged, convicted, and entered back into society. And we're looking seriously at the Justice Commission. Were these appropriately placed, and can we do it better? And so what they call barrier crimes, If you had a felony, for example, maybe you can't work with the elderly, but you're really talented at it. And if you're held accountable, maybe you could do that. Did that law for barrier working really work? And so we're going to have to look at those. And those are some of the things that we're going to look at. The other thing that I will look at, and I think the commission may not have a recommendation on it, and that is if somebody loses their driver's license because of DUI, if they've lost it for a lifetime, we know as a fact that many of those are driving yet, and they're driving without insurance, and quite often people who get hit by them are left with no remedy. Can we get a conditional or provisional driver's license so that they will be insured and that they can work, they can be productive in life? Some of those are some of the things that both the Pew Foundation will be looking at, the commission will be looking at it. And as you mentioned, I have Senate Bill 91 that has at least a template in there. There are many other issues that we'll be looking for, but those data-driven, proven practices that they see from Texas, that they've seen from other states in the United States that have worked, we're going to be taking those very seriously.
We're talking about justice reform today on Talk of Alaska. One of the ideas that has kind of percolated up, and Zoe, maybe you can jump in on this this particular point too, the idea of trying to reintegrate people successfully into society. One of the ideas now that I've heard discussed is allowing felons who have lost their right to vote figure out a pathway to regain that right so that they can be a part of the democratic system once they've paid their debt to society, being able to vote again. Zoe, what are you finding with the states that you're working with in that respect? And then I would ask Senator Coghill what your thoughts are following that about, do you think felons should get their right to vote back? Zoe?
Thanks so much. You know, what we've, the sort of scope of our work in Alaska is really looking at the use of correctional resources. And so we have looked a lot less at some of those barriers that the senator outlined. That said, one of the kind of key questions when you look at barriers, whether that they are barriers to housing or to a license or to jobs or to enfranchisement to voting, are one of the ways to look at that on the front end is as the senator said, what kinds of offenses we decide should be felonies versus those that should be misdemeanors or some other kind of infraction. Because mm-hmm. if you begin to have that conversation, it does change who gets those barriers, who's restricted from some of those reentering programs and privileges. So we've looked mostly at those sentencing and corrections policies that are determining how Alaska is using its correctional resources. That said, there will be invariably collateral consequences, hopefully for the best, as those policies unfold.
Senator Coghill, what are your thoughts about that? Should felons, once they've completed the sentences that were imposed by the courts, once they have paid their debt to society, should they get their right to vote back?
Well, let's start with the debt to society first. There are some times where people are just dangerous to society generally, but there are some times they've stolen from people, and I think restitution to individuals rather than just to society is something we need to think about and think about better. And it is true that through the years we've been tougher on crime by adding felonies because it's a hammer you like in order to enforce something. Sometimes I think we've gone overboard on that. And so the one of the things that we've asked this commission to look at is our mandatory sentencing structure appropriate for the crime that's done, and do a review of that. And that will be a little bit of an ongoing review, but that will be something we need to look at. With regard to returning voting rights, I think what we need to look at first is, will you be productive in society? And do we allow you the tools to be productive? That's why I talked about the driver's license and the work barriers first. I think we need to focus on that first. I think there should be ways that people can get their voting rights back. Right now, you can wait for a time limit. I think it's 10 years to get your voting rights back. There may be better and more accelerated ways of doing that. And I've toyed with the idea of how do you have a felony review commission to show that if under certain circumstances, that long tail that a felony generally will have to you, is that appropriate? And have you lived a productive life and clean life in a way that should not have that power over you? It's the scarlet letter problem that we continually struggle with in the legislature is if somebody has paid back or done the time, why should that crime have that long tail? With the sexual assault and sexual crimes, we have had a very long tail put to that. But on some felonies, it's probably reasonable to relook at those and ask the question. So the look at the sentencing practices as well as some of the barriers will help us kind of flesh out a better way of holding people accountable but letting them be productive.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment now. Kelly is in Anchorage and has some comments about the pretrial status from an inmate's perspective. Hello, Kelly.
Hello. I would love to speak to the sentencing issue, but I will stick with pretrial because that's my experience right now is that I've been pretrial for 4 years now, and 2 years I spent in Highland, and I've been out on bail now for 2 years. So my issue, I guess, is that the amount of money and resources it takes to be out is incredibly challenging. And I've been fortunate where I have people that were able to help me, but I started with a $500,000 cash-only bail. After 2 years, it was reduced down to $50,000 cash corporate, but I have two live third parties and electronic monitoring, which costs $20 a day. So just the barriers to try and be out of the system and be a productive citizen while not even convicted is really difficult. And like I said, I've been fortunate where I had help. And for those who don't, they're stuck in there. They're stuck in there for pretrial, which could be 4 years, 6 years, 8 years. If the state is unwilling to negotiate or have any pressure fiscally to bargain, then inmates are stuck. And I think the big problem here in Alaska especially is the third-party custodian requirement. It's very hard to find people. They have to be vetted. They have to have a clean, squeaky clean history, and they risk their own misdemeanor charges for failure to report. So to get people willing to do that is extremely challenging, and I just wanted to say that that's the struggle of my experience is the clog in the system, probably of people like me who, even though I'm out now, I was in for 2 years. And and I want to thank Senator Coghill for working on this because it's not a glamorous topic, and I imagine there's not a lot of support for it. But, you know, if you can get beyond the emotion and the disregard for inmates, criminality, all that, fiscally, it just makes sense that it needs to be looked at. So,
thank you. Thank you, Kelly, for your call. And wow, 4 years in pretrial, that really makes the case for the discussion that we're having today about the need for reform. And I would say, I know that you want to jump in here, Jeff, and I'm going to let you do that in a second. But I would say that your point about Senator Coghill taking this on and that it not being popular, it's actually one of the few bipartisan efforts that we're seeing in kind of a fractured legislature. There is a lot of support in a bipartisan manner. And that is one of the requirements, actually, of Pew coming in to work with states is there has to be that level of support in a bipartisan manner. So that's the good news about this effort at reform. And Jeff, Jesse, you wanted to add a comment after Kelly.
Yeah, that's one of the things the commission is looking at is this whole pretrial release issue. I think most people think when they think pretrial release, they think bail. And they think cash bail. And what's the problem? You get a bail amount, you go to a bail bondsman, you put up a security, and you get bailed out. The legislature, I think meaning well over the number of years, has added a lot of options for judges to use in order to protect the public safety when somebody does get released, in addition to just a cash bail. One that was mentioned is a third-party custodian. Another is 24/7, twice-a-day alcohol monitoring. There's electronic monitoring, which is the ankle bracelet. There's the interlock devices that can go onto your car. Well, if you get a situation where either prosecutors or a judge is looking at that list and saying, well, more is better, and they start loading them up in multiple requirements, we think that's part of what's driving the higher number of people being incarcerated pretrial is it's a cash bail with a third-party custodian and 24/7 alcohol monitoring and an ankle bracelet and an interlock device. And if you don't have a job and you don't have any money and you don't have any way to pay for those things, you're not getting out. And those are things we think that we can address while continuing, as the senator says, to prioritize protecting the public safety.
We are talking about justice reform today, and we'll continue our discussion as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to BeAnEngineerAlaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about justice reform, and we've got some callers on the line. I'd like to get through a few of those. We've had some good comments, and Sarah is on the line from Homer. Hi, Sarah. Sarah? Maybe Sarah is no longer on the line from Homer. All right, let's go to Mary in Anchorage. Mary?
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Yeah, hi, Lori. This is Mary Sattler calling in. Hi, Senator Coghill and Jeff Jesse. I just had a quick comment. One of the things that I've seen is if you have a very aggressive district attorney and perhaps some overextended public defenders, it's kind of a worst-case scenario for people in that judicial district. And one example is, you know, if somebody charges someone else with domestic violence, which is a very serious crime and can really affect your future if that's on your record, you know, and I guess as a caveat, one of the problems with the domestic violence law, in my opinion, is the first person to call and make that allegation is the person who wins. Those are my few comments. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call, Mary. Jeff or Senator Coghill, either one of you want to weigh in on these comments?
Well, first of all, it's just great to hear Mary's voice, and she has served her community well. It's a good point. The trouble with law is you have to have a law of general applicability, and one size just doesn't fit all. And so the first person to the judge was a presumptive for safety so that people could go and get safe haven immediately. But it also does have that other effect of, you know, you run first so that you have an actually upper hand over somebody that you might want to control. So we depend upon judges to be able to discern through that. But the law was meant for those to run to a safe haven and get immediate help. It doesn't always work.
All right, let's go back to the phones quickly. Robert is in Palmer. Robert?
Yes. Hi. I got a issue with the fact that we have a declining crime rate in our state, but we have an increase in conviction rates. One of the things, by my own experience, not me in the court, but family, I watched a prosecutor and a judge not be held accountable for the things they were saying they were, the prosecutor was free to lie about the family and stuff. And I know that's a strong accusation, but we've been trying to find out how to get these people held accountable, because we have the proof to show that they were lies, and yet there is no one we can go to. So the judge has nobody making sure they're handling their case right until it goes to appeals, and then if the case is appealed, there is no accountability back to the judge. So they just keep cranking the way they're going, and they might say, well, we can't get by with that, but nothing is done about it. And the prosecutor, too. But the problem is, you've got people sitting waiting for appeals for years before they even get that chance for appeal.
It's similar to the situation that CJ was talking about, and also the young woman who called in about being in pretrial for 4 years. We're definitely defining this problem. Thank you for the call, Robert. We're defining this problem. We only have a minute or so left, and I want to get back to a couple other questions for Senator Coghill and Jeff Jesse and maybe Zoe Towns as well. There, one of the goals is to avert all prison growth. Have any states achieved that, and what does that look like?
That would be a Zoe question.
Zoe.
This is Zoe. Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of states have been able to avert their projected prison growth. Several states have been able to go farther and actually begin to decline their prison population. I'm calling to you, as I said, from Mississippi right now, that underwent a reform effort that looks a little bit like what Alaska's engaging in 2 years ago. And the time that they started, the state had the second highest incarceration rate in the nation and was growing at a pretty fast clip. And after their reforms, you know, now 2 years later, their population has declined 15%. So it not only didn't grow, but it dropped down, and they've been closing wings of prisons and saving state taxpayers quite a bit of money. So it's certainly possible.
Okay, great. And we only have about 30 seconds left. Senator Coghill, the omnibus bill that you've put forward, 91, what do you expect to see in January with that effort?
Well, you'll see the recommendations come from the Justice Commission. You'll see it find its way into law in public hearings. So I would say stay tuned, be a part of the conversation, look up Senate Bill 91 and follow the committees that it's in. You'll have plenty of opportunity for input.
All right. Thank you so much to my guest, Senator John Coghill from ISDN and at KUAC in Fairbanks, Jeff Jesse of the Mental Health Trust Authority, and Zoe Towns, State Director of Pew Charitable Trust. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Waldron. Goodbye.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com, and by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.